Welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. We've got three really interesting cybersecurity stories lined up for you today.
Yeah, definitely a mixed bag.
We're going to skip the super dry tech talk and really look at these more like, you know, unfolding narratives. Each one has its own twists, its own technical bits we can geek out on a little.
Absolutely. We're looking at data breaches, some potentially international hacking, and even a shift in how we think about privacy and everyday tools.
Exactly. So get ready. We're going to unpack a major healthcare data issue, a kind of shadowy intrusion into business software, and then this new privacy thing coming to online meetings.
It really shows the range, doesn't it? From very personal data impact to like global business systems, and then the tools we use, well, every single day.
Couldn't agree more. Hey, let's jump right in. Story number one, we're calling it the healthcare heist. Sounds dramatic, I know, but it kind of fits. We're talking about Ascension, huge healthcare system, right?
Yeah.
And they've disclosed this data incident affecting, what, over 430,000 patients.
Yeah, that's a significant number.
So let's unpack this timeline. It seems like the information might have been compromised way back in December last year, but they only confirmed it in January.
That lag isn't super surprising, unfortunately. Detecting these things can take time.
Right.
But the how is really interesting here. Ascension is saying it wasn't directly them, initially anyway. It was a former business partner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, apparently this partner had a security lapse, some vulnerability in third-party software they were using, and, well, patient data seems to have been stolen from them.
That's classic supply chain risk. Again.
Exactly. It's a huge blind spot for a lot of organizations. You can have Fort Knox security internally, but if your partner leaves a window open,
it doesn't matter. So
yeah.
It's like trusting someone who installed your security system, but their systems got breached.
Precisely. And the data. Yeah, well, it's pretty much everything you wouldn't want exposed.
Yeah. Looking at the list. Physician names, dates you're in the hospital, diagnoses, billing codes, medical record numbers, insurance details.
And all the personal stuff, too. Names, addresses, phone, email, birth dates, race, gender, even social security numbers for some people.
Wow. That is comprehensive.
Yeah.
And incredibly sensitive. The sheer volume of it is kind of staggering.
It really paints a target on healthcare, doesn't it? This isn't just financial data. It's deeply personal health info, the potential for misuse. Identity theft is bad enough, but think about, I don't know, discrimination based on health info down the line.
Hmm. That's a chilling thought. And the notification process, it seems like it trickled out. Some initial filings in April mentioned smaller numbers, Texas and Massachusetts.
Right. And then later in April, the full scope, that 437,000 plus figure, was reported to HHS. It does make you wonder about the process of figuring out just how bad a breach really is.
It must be complex.
Yeah.
And here's something else. This isn't Ascension's first rodeo, is it?
No, unfortunately not. They had that massive Blockbuster ransomware attack back in May 2024. That one hit nearly 5.6 million individuals.
5.6 million. Okay, that was huge. And that started differently, right? An employee downloaded a malicious file.
Yeah, that's what was reported, a classic phishing or malware delivery vector. And the impact then was severe operational disruption, going back to paper records, postponing procedures.
It just shows how critical these systems are. It's not just data, it's patient care.
Exactly. So having these two major incidents, you know, relatively close together, it really underscores the constant pressure these healthcare organizations are under, from sophisticated ransomware gangs to supply chain vulnerabilities.
It's coming from all sides.
Yeah.
So what's the immediate aftermath now for these 430,000 people?
Well, Ascension is offering the standard 2 years of free identity monitoring services, which is helpful, of course, but
the data is still out there.
The data is out there. And the trust, well, that takes longer to rebuild.
Absolutely. Okay, let's shift gears from healthcare data. Let's move into the world of big business software, enterprise systems.
Right.
Story two, shadowy intrusion into business software. This one involves SAP NetWeaver servers, and researchers are pointing fingers at a Chinese threat actor.
Yeah, this one has all the hallmarks of a, let's say, more sophisticated, possibly state-linked operation.
So what's the vulnerability here?
It's a flaw in SAP NetWeaver Visual Composer, CVE-2025-31324, maximum severity, critical.
Okay.
And the really interesting part, SAP pushed out an emergency patch in late April, but only after researchers saw it being actively exploited in the wild.
Whoa, so it was likely a zero day or exploited very quickly after discovery.
Signs point strongly towards a zero day, a vulnerability unknown to SAP until attackers started using it. That's a powerful tool for an attacker.
The ultimate secret weapon, basically. a flaw the defenders don't even know about yet. And the attack method sounds worryingly simple.
Deceptively so. Unauthenticated attackers, meaning they don't need login credentials, could exploit this flaw to just upload malicious files.
So upload files onto a core business server.
Yep, which can lead straight to remote code execution. Basically, they can run whatever they want on the server, complete system compromise.
That's the keys to the kingdom, isn't it?
Pretty much. They can install backdoors, steal data, move laterally through the network. Anything, really.
And there's evidence this actually happened.
Oh, yeah. Multiple security firms confirmed it. They saw attackers uploading things called JSP web shells, basically hidden doors to control the server via a web browser. And even the Brute Retell Red Team tool.
Okay, Brute Retell, that's not amateur hour. That's a sophisticated post-exploitation toolkit.
Exactly. It suggests a well-resourced, skilled actor. And crucially, some systems that were compromised had already been patched against known flaws. That really cemented the zero-day hypothesis initially.
So even if you were diligent with patching, you could still have been hit early on. That's rough.
Very rough. And the timeline is concerning, too. Mandian saw these zero-day attacks happening as far back as mid-March this year.
Mid-March?
Yeah, with reconnaissance activity poking around, scanning detected even earlier back in January.
So they had potentially months of access before it became widely known.
Potentially, yes. Significant window of opportunity.
And how widespread is this vulnerability?
Well, the Shadow Server Foundation is tracking, I think, over 200 vulnerable SAP NetWeaver servers still exposed online right now.
Okay, 200 is significant, but...
But experts estimate that maybe around 20 Fortune 500 or Global 500 companies could be vulnerable, and a good chunk of those might already be compromised. SAP NetWeaver is, you know, backbone infrastructure for a lot of major global businesses.
Right. Supply chains, financials, HR, it runs critical stuff. Targeting that feels... strategic.
It does. It suggests an intent beyond just quick financial gain, maybe espionage, maybe future disruption capabilities.
In the attribution, they're linking it to a group called Chaya 04, believed to be Chinese. Based on what?
A few technical breadcrumbs, as they say. The attacks often came from IP addresses using dodgy digital certificates pretending to be Cloudflare.
Okay.
These IPs were often hosted by Chinese cloud providers. Plus, the attackers deployed tools known to be used by Chinese actors, including some Chinese language tools, like a web shell called Supershell.
Interesting. Digital forensics piecing it together. Mm-hmm. Of course, attribution is always tricky. Could be misdirection.
It always could be, but the combination of factors here seems fairly indicative, according to researchers.
So what's the advice for SAP admins right now? Panic.
Hey, hopefully not panic, but definitely urgency. Patch immediately, obviously. That emergency patch is critical.
Right.
Also, restrict access to those metadata uploader services if possible. Monitor logs like crazy for any suspicious activity. And maybe even consider disabling the Visual Composer service altogether if you don't strictly need it.
Just turn it off if you're not using it. Seems sensible.
Yeah. And CISA, the U.S. Cybersecurity Agency, they've added this flaw to their known exploited vulnerabilities catalog. They're telling U.S. federal agencies they need to patch this by May 20th.
That deadline really emphasizes the perceived risk level.
It absolutely does. Time is of the essence on this one.
Okay. Wow. All right. Final story. Let's shift from these large-scale system compromises to something maybe closer to home for many listeners, Microsoft Teams.
Ah, yes, the ubiquitous Teams meeting.
Right. So Microsoft is apparently developing a new feature. We're calling it locking down the meeting room. The idea is to stop people from taking screenshots of sensitive stuff shared during meetings.
This is an interesting move in the sort of cat and mouse game of information control in collaboration tools.
As it does to work.
The mechanism sounds pretty simple, actually. If this feature is active and you try to take a screenshot of the team's meeting window, it just turns black.
Oh, like a digital blackout curtain for screenshots?
Kind of, yeah. Prevents the standard OS level screen capture from grabbing the meeting content.
Clever. And it's coming soon, July 2025.
That's the reported plan, yeah, rolling out globally.
And across basically all platforms, Android, desktop, iOS, web.
Seems like it. They want broad coverage, which makes sense given how many people use Teams.
Okay, but
yeah,
the obvious workaround.
The phone camera.
Right. Nothing stops someone from just taking a picture of their screen with their phone or another camera.
Exactly. So it's not foolproof physical security. It's aimed squarely at preventing casual or opportunistic digital screenshots. It raises the barrier, doesn't eliminate the risk entirely.
Good point. It's about friction, maybe deterring the less determined leak. And there are still questions about how it'll be implemented, right?
Big questions, yeah. Like, will it be on by default? That could annoy a lot of people who use screenshots legitimately for notes or collaboration.
Totally. I sometimes grab a quick shot of a slide.
Right. Or will it be something the meeting organizer or the company admin has to turn on? If it's optional, how many people actually bother?
Hmm. Adoption could be patchy if it's optional and not well communicated.
Those implementation details are really key to how useful this feature will actually be in practice. It's interesting, Meta just did something similar in WhatsApp with their advanced chat privacy features, restricting saves and exports.
So it's kind of a trend. Platforms trying to give users more control over ephemerality or preventing easy copying.
Seems like it. And Microsoft's doing other things in Teams too, right? Better screen sharing controls in Teams rooms, AI summaries of meetings.
Yeah, the AI audio overview thing. Looks like they're layering different approaches to security, privacy, and just managing meeting information overload.
And they have to, really. What was the user number? Over 320 million monthly active Teams users reported last year.
Yeah, a massive number. Any change impacts a huge swath of the global workforce.
So finding that balance, security versus usability, preventing leaks without hindering collaboration, that's the tightrope they're walking.
Definitely a tricky balance. Okay, so that's our three stories for today. Quite a range.
It really is.
We went from the really personal impact of that Ascension healthcare data incident touching on supply chain risks
to the potentially systemic threat of sophisticated attacks on critical business software like SAP NetWeaver.
And finished with efforts to manage information sharing and the collaboration tools we use constantly, like Teams.
They seem distinct, but there is a common thread, isn't there? The constant evolution of threats and the ongoing effort to adapt our defenses and our tools.
Yeah, it's this constant push and pull. Attackers find a new angle, defenders react, technology providers try to build in better protections.
It's a narrative playing out across the entire digital landscape. These aren't just isolated tech news items. They're chapters in that larger story.
So for you, our listener, what's the takeaway? I mean, it really hammers home the need to stay aware, right?
Absolutely. Understanding the risks, whether it's your personal health data, the systems your company relies on, or even just the features in your chat apps.
Taking proactive steps where you can patching, good password hygiene, being skeptical of unexpected emails or files. The basics still matter.
They really do. And just staying informed as these stories develop. This isn't static. It's constantly changing.
Which brings us to maybe a final thought to leave you with. As these attacks get more sophisticated, and as we demand more privacy, but also seamless usability, how does that balance shift?
Yeah, where does the responsibility ultimately lie? With the platform providers, the organizations, or with us as individual users? It's likely a mix, but figuring out that mix.
That's the ongoing challenge, isn't it? Something to definitely keep thinking about. Thanks for diving deep with us today on Cyber Mornings Daily.